Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and most welcome to the last presentation of today. It's called LEGO Power, Unlocking the Hidden Treasures of Service Maps at Auckland Transport. So it's all about LEGO, all about building blocks, and we're here to share this with you. My name is Leon Swart. I'm a service management consultant at Microsoft. Based in Wellington, so I'm up here for TechEd and the lovely Auckland, and I'm going to ask my co-presenter from Auckland Transport to introduce herself, please.
Hi everyone, I'm Jeannie Powell-Smith. I'm AT HOP Technical Manager at Auckland Transport, and I've probably had more years than I want to tell you in IT support.
Exactly, thank you for that. So it's always a nice thing when we have customers that are willing to stand up in public and at conferences like this to share with everybody the stories and the journeys that we've embarked with them, especially on a topic like service management. And yes, service management is not a technology topic as such, but it is so important when we talk about the IT world today. So the agenda for today, we've just gone through the introductions. Jeannie is going to talk us through who is Auckland Transport. We're going to talk to you and share with you the journey that we've done, and we're going to specifically share the service map and service architecture map component of that journey. We're also then going to talk about benefits, and there's this big light bulb moment, and that's really where this session was born, is out of that big realization moment that happened there. We're going to talk about next steps, and at the end there will be Q&A. So I've also got some giveaways here, so please pay attention. So all right, if we then move on to talk about who is Auckland Transport, shall we do the giveaways first?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Jeannie's going to tell us more about Auckland Transport, but before I do that, and this is to all the people who do not work for Auckland Transport. Okay, who can tell us what are something that Auckland Transport do that are not on the slide?
Buses are on the slide.
There
sorry.
We go. The man talked. Sorry, bud.
Streets. Mobile app.
Mobile app. Yeah. Is that a good one?
Yeah.
Right. Who's the guy that got that over there? You want to run up and come? Or
you get it afterwards if you want.
There you go, well done. Okay, something else. Barking tickets.
That's on the slide.
Sorry.
Streaming video congestion. Be nice.
You were saying something? Ferries on the screen.
Cameras. Traffic cameras, yes, we do lots of cameras.
Does that deserve a prize? Cool. Where is that? You can catch. Sorry.
Cycling. Yeah, absolutely, cycling.
I only had two prizes for that one. Sorry, guys.
Should have been a bit quicker there.
All right, Jeannie, will you please tell us about the birth of Auckland Transport on 2010, the 1st of November, and also what you do, please?
So Auckland Transport was born on the 1st of November 2010 out of the local government reorganisation in Auckland. What made it a really interesting environment IT-wise was that it was new. So it was a new network. It was new from the lungs up in infrastructure terms. And we sprung into being as this enormous startup, opened the doors, and there were 1,000 users on day one. Our client base, being Auckland, we have 1 million people who are our customers. So on day one was a very, very interesting day. What we do can basically fall into the three streams there. So we do driving and parking, public transport, which is dear to my heart because I'm all about the 80 hot card, and projects and roading. We also do cycling, and if your kids use a walking school bus, we do that as well. So we do a lot of community transport. Obviously, like you said earlier, there may be services that we provide that you don't actually choose to use. Okay, so no one is going to choose to go and get a parking infringement. But what it's about for us is making sure that if you do have to use that service, that we give you the best customer experience that we can in paying for that ticket or in discussing that ticket with our parking people. So lots of different things that we do. Our IT environment is very complex. We have a mixture of in-house and outsource support, and we have a mixture of technologies that we use within our environment. So very, very interesting. And we are constantly innovating onto it. So in 2013, we had around about 120 IT projects that we delivered with our business. This year, we would expect to be closer to 150. So a very, very changing environment.
And what about the people in this changing environment? Are that a constant stream of people that stay the same, or?
We have a mixture, again. So a lot of our innovation and development is done by contract resource who come in and just do that delivery and then move on. We have a lot of vendor partners who we see as an extension of our support teams. And then we have a core support team as well.
Cool. Thank you for that, Jeannie. So we're now going to share with you the journey that we started with Auckland Transport about 2 years ago. So whom of you are service management, active in service management in day-to-day lives? See a few hands. Yeah, there's at least a few people. Cool. So a lot of you not. But when we do a service management and we're starting with service management work, service management is really about the people and process side of things. Gartner went and he said when he did research, he found that in day-to-day IT environments, about 80% of issues are caused by people and process, only 20% by just pure technology failures. So really there's a portion of 80% of issues that often don't get addressed and where things go wrong. So that's where we as service management go in. So we start off with an organization generally doing a risk assessment. And that risk assessment is across operations to understand where is the organization specifically at risk from a service management perspective. So every organization is different, there's different environments, different challenges, the unique settings and all the rest of it. So we then go, and part of that assessment is then coming up with a remediation plan where we physically sit, and I will then make recommendations to the customer to say, well, this is where the areas I think you need to address first, based on IP that we've got inside of Microsoft, as well as the unique situations of the customer. And then we work through with a customer in coming up with a plan to effectively do all those things and plan out a statement of work and a program of work to really then go and do those things over time. And at that time, obviously, there's a lot of other things that we did as well. But out of this, one of the very first things we had to do because of a unique situation in Auckland Transport at that stage was they felt, well, we need to create these three service maps very quickly. And this is where it all started. I'm going to ask Jeannie just to give us a little bit of context about why those three service maps were so important at that particular point in time.
At that point in time, most of our customer-facing services were on three websites, and those websites were built on a SharePoint platform, and they had an identity management and a customer relationship management component. Now, we actually had PMC across support across those three components, and as a result of having PMC, we needed to do the service maps so that the support crew, if they were engaged, would know what was going on in our environment. Now, I didn't actually know that at the time, and the operations manager came to see me one day and said, Jeannie, I want you to work with this guy called Leon, and he's from Microsoft, and he's going to be here next week, and you need to give him 3 days out of your calendar. And I thought, oh no, 3 days. Like, I'm an operations girl, you don't have 3 days in operations. So I thought, oh really, do I really have to? But in the end, it was explained to me that if we didn't have these maps, then the PMC crew couldn't help us.
What does the PMC, what does it stand for and what does it mean to you as a customer?
Well, so Premier Mission Critical, as a customer, I see it as having two sides. So we have a proactive side where we work with the team like Leon to do service mapping. And then there's the operational side for those like, oh crap moments. When you have a 24/7, 365 service that's important to you and to all of your customers, either severely impacted or dead in the water and you can't fix it, and so you want to call the SWAT team, and that would be PNZ. So I have a really small window to return to service. I have a 4-hour return to service for a SEV 1 incident, and the bottom line is I don't want the crew that I'm calling to have to upskill on my return to service time. I already want them to know what's going on in my environment. I already want them to know what is hanging together and how it works.
So in other words, that is very important from our perspective as Microsoft, and it's not only myself as service management, but the whole PMC crew and the people internationally. That if we understand the customer's environment very well, then obviously we can support them much better, and it's really about that partnership. And Ginny, you indicated to me that you found that the service maps had specific benefits to you, but very much in the support perspective. Would you like to elaborate on that for us, please?
Oh, absolutely, in support. You know, we had some very, very clever people put together our services, and they did that by using a very large amount of integration. So the service map made it really, really clear what hooked into what and how the whole service hung together. In support terms, that is just fabulous for incident management, for brake fixes, yeah.
Exactly, and it's really about this information. It wasn't one person that knew all that pieces of information, was it?
No, absolutely not. It was spread over many people and across many organisations as well.
Cool. So I'm just going to talk to you briefly about a service map. Those people that know me from a previous life, I've done lots of training, so this is not a training session, but just to provide context to the members of the audience who don't understand this, it's really about understanding if we as IT are delivering value to our customers, we call that value a service. So we're doing lots of different stuff, and that service don't only comprise of a particular piece of hardware or an application. Many people think an application is a service. But it's not a service in itself. It's part of a particular service. And that's where the Lego thing comes in, because you've got all these different components from an end-to-end perspective that make up the service. So if I'm an end user and I'm busy inputting data that sits on an application on a server that sits in Wellington, so if that server falls over in Wellington, or there's a network fault between here and Hamilton, or my desktop PC breaks, I'm describing three different technology failures, but the same user experience. I can't work. And it's about understanding that end-to-end big picture. That really is what these service maps is all about. So it's really just a mind map of understanding what those components are. And the trick is the people who understand those different components are not the same people. They are often scattered across the organization or across IT in most cases. And it's about that knowledge management, about bringing all that together so that everybody talks off the same view, that everybody has exactly the same view when something in the service obviously happened. And there's a lot of benefits around it, but obviously what really struck the trick over here was the fact that from a support perspective, the incident and problem side of things, that was where the benefits were. Do you want to tell us how it helped you in change management?
Oh, absolutely. Like, having these, and at this point we still only had mapped the three original services for the websites. So in an environment where you're doing a lot of maintenance and when you've got a high degree of development, in terms of change and release, you need to be able to understand what will happen. If you were to do some kind of maintenance on a widget right down at the bottom of the stack, what will happen to the services that are sitting on top of it? And so in terms of change and release, it was about using these things for risk mitigation.
Cool. So obviously, as we introduced and as we did the service maps, there were immediate benefits of that to Auckland Transport. And then you went into a very interesting period, more or less between December and August of 2012, 2013, and there were some huge amount of changes that are happening in your organisation. Would you like to tell us about those, please?
We'd gone through some technical wraps and, because of the way that we started up, there was no business before the 1st of November 2010. There was nobody to consult about how we should build the infrastructure and what the business needs were. So, you know, we were playing catch-up and having a lot of changes to our core infrastructure, a lot of things like LUN realignments and way down underneath the stuff that you guys probably understand, but I don't. And so there were no changes to the actual application layers or to the service itself, but what we needed to do was make sure that it was up and running after we had done those really deep, complex infrastructure changes. So one way to minimise risk with those was to use the service maps in terms of shutdown and startup sequences and sequencing of how to decouple the systems. And the service maps were utterly just invaluable for that. Then as we were increasing our innovation and increasing our delivery onto these platforms, same thing, wanting to make sure that a group of people beavering away making some kind of widget were not going to scuttle the project over here that was also making some kind of delivery. So very important for sequencing into the same environment.
Cool, thank you for that. So then we went into a next period, which was really September last year. And from a timing and organisational requirement perspective, we then started kicking off a number of the actions. So you remember the remediation plan I spoke to you about earlier? It was really about kicking off those actions. But we talked about incidents and problems, and we did a lot of other work. But this afternoon, I specifically want to focus on the service mapping component. So what we then did is many organisations, when you walk in there, and if you ask them which services do IT provide to the rest of the business, they will come and say, well, we've got a list of services. And what they then provide you is, Dinkum, a list of applications. Which is great that the list of applications are there, but it doesn't really give you the end-to-end view of what those end-to-end perspective and the end-to-end user experience is really like. Hence my example of a user inputting data, three different technology failures, but the same user experience. So what we then started to do, and this was done very much by IT at that stage, and the engagement of the business was not really working very well. It was a bunch of IT people, and we got the people in the room and said, okay, now let's sit down and work out what those services actually are, and just identify a list of these different services that IT then provide. And I can't remember how many we had on the list, it was more than 50 at one point.
Yeah, I think we identified 50 services that we provided in terms of IT. There were a lot.
And then what we did is, and that was actually quite interesting discussions, it was, there were things identified that certain people in IT didn't even know that was happening. And just shows about the fast changing environment, how many of these, and you talked about widgets that the different projects were plugging in, and all the different things. And we then decided to, if we really want to start getting traction on this, you work on the 80-20 principle, because you're never going to get everything done for every single service. So then we went through an exercise where we said, let's identify what are the top 10 most important services in the opinion of IT that would be most important to the business. And can you recall how that discussion went, Jeannie?
Oh, crikey, I tell you. The thing that we needed to do first before we did that was identify owners of the services. And so some services are quite sexy to own, you know, like, and some of them you wouldn't want to say, no, I'm responsible for that, I own that, you know. So we had some things that had owners and some things that didn't. So the services that had owners, people were plugging for their service. My service is more important than any of these other services are. Oh. It was, yeah, it was unbelievable. So we, through a period of negotiation with Leon as referee, and it did take a couple of hours, we couldn't actually get 10 services. So we have at Auckland Transport our top 11 services.
I remember our first iteration came down to about 35. And we said, okay, 35 is probably a bit too many. Then we did a second iteration. We came to about 19. So, okay, guys, let's give it one more try and see if we can, you know, at least just, you know, some are slightly more important than others. And sometimes it's a bit of who beats his chest the hardest, you know what I'm saying? So, and we ended up with the top 11. But at least then we stopped and we said, good, at least now we have a good idea of where are the top 80% of the things that we really need to focus our attention on. And what I also need to tell you at this stage is at that stage, there was an organizational realignment in progress as well at Auckland Transport. So certain people were unsure, certain people were obviously not available for sessions. So it was really interesting times and challenging times that we had to work through to just try and get that momentum and really start it. But it was a good time to do that in terms of while all this changes was on the go, to then get all that going at the same time and start from, you know, at least a good place in terms of where those services are identified. You want to add something to that, Tom, Jenny?
Yeah, you know, we talk about organisational realignments and the effect that that has on people, obviously, as human beings. But in an IT operation, the effect of a realignment is huge because you actually have to change your back-end systems. So all of your ERPs and your collaboration systems, you have to pick teams up from one place and move them to another. There's a lot of support work that goes on in that kind of exercise. And so that's why we had to put service mapping on hold. But at that point, I was pretty glad that we had managed to convince a bunch of IT people that there was life after servers. Like, most people didn't even really grasp that services were a collection of things. So we'd come an incredibly long way by the time we were scrapping out those top 11.
And I think what Jeannie just said underlines what I said earlier on in the presentation, is in terms of service management, it's about process and people. And it's and together with technology, if those three don't work well together, we do find that things go horribly wrong in real life. So then, Jeannie, we've got traction. The organizational alignment kicked in, and then we started with the effort of starting to document and design these 10 service maps. I think if you could tell us what were some of the highlights that came out of those design sessions for you.
So by this time we had completely converted the support teams who had been running around with these service maps trying to do break fixes and manage incidents, manage change. There was no problem getting the support teams into a room to get their IP. The project teams that were delivering to deadlines and on very tight budgets and didn't have budget for us to take their resources out of their project and stick them in a room for a couple of hours to talk about IP were a completely different story. So, a mixed bag to get everyone involved, but I think they spoke for themselves after we started doing them.
We started kicking off a bunch of these services, and we did the medium, complex ones, and often it was about the people that we could get available. And some of the stuff was still in flight, and the knowledge was sitting with a lot of project people. That was very hard to get at, and all the rest of it. But then we got to a service called middleware and integration. And I think that one was a unique one that, from a service map perspective, if you could maybe just tell us what you thought of that.
So service mapping follows templates, obviously, tried and true. But sometimes with a tool that you're adding into your tool set, you need to be able to be agile. And so what we found with the middleware service was that we needed to change what we were presenting. We were collecting all of the same information, but it was really important to present that information to the people who were going to use these things in a different way. So what we did with our middleware service was that we identified all of the data flows that went through it, which isn't something traditionally that you do in service mapping, but you have to change things to fit your business.
Exactly, and just to get, how many different data flows would you cover? Probably about 20 of them?
Yeah, I think we had 19 or 20 19 at that 20. Point. There's a lot more now.
A lot more now, there we go. And these things continually change, so we have to realign and represent the service map to actually make this connection. And at this stage, the benefits were still seen, or what the ones that Auckland Transport got out of it, was still very much support-focused.
Yeah, completely support-focused.
And then, Jeannie, we went on to the AIFS one.
Oh, yes. So AIFS is Auckland Integrated Fare Scheme, and it was a very lengthy multi-year project that started before Auckland Transport started. The end of the AIFS project delivered 80 hop, so I hope you've all got an 80 hop card as well.
The ones that shake their heads, you all drive cars?
So in terms of AIFS, it was trying to understand what it was that the project was going to deliver. So it was a transition exercise.
Cool. And even there, we had to go and realign the way that we presented AIFS as well. And then, ladies and gentlemen, and Jeannie, we've got time on hand here. So this was really the big light bulb moment, and I've got Jeannie's permission to tell you this. We were sitting one afternoon, and this AIFS system is a complex beast. It was this huge, complicated project, and this was going live. And the amount of people that really knew, that was left at that stage, that knew how this thing all fitted together, was, you know, you could count them on a couple of fingers. I don't think you can even count them on one hand.
Yeah.
And effectively, to get hold of those people were also very challenging. And this service had 22 vendors associated. And as we were drawing up the service map, which was really good up to that point in the stage, Jeannie literally this one afternoon sat with her elbows on the table like this, hand up next to the head, and was physically starting to pull her hair out. And she was saying to me, Leon, how on earth am I going to make sure that each of these different components of the service is covered by a support contract, or that somebody actually owns each of those, especially those stuff that we give the vendors to? And that evening in my hotel room, I saw the opportunity, and I then created, from the information I had, the service architecture map. And I'll let Jeannie tell you what happened the following morning.
So in terms of transitioning this complex service, what we'd done was we had applied the same methodology that we had applied to every other service. We had collected a whole bunch of information around components and processes and everything that made up the service. It was so big and there was so many pieces to it that I couldn't actually see it in my mind. I couldn't put a boundary around it. I thought, what am I going to do with all of this information and how am I going to present it to the people that need to understand how it works? I was absolutely beside myself, and in terms of projects, I guess that was like the valley of despair or whatever that people talk about. So Leon came in one morning and he said, Jeannie, I've sent you an email and I'm really excited about this. I want you to open this email and have a look. And I just thought, can't you see? I'm just having a meltdown here. I'm having a moment and I don't want to open your email. But anyway, great respect for Leon. And so I did open it and it was just magic. It was the answer to all of my questions. How am I going to do this? How am I going to do that? How am I going to see this thing within a fenced boundary? And I looked at this architecture map and it was just magic.
Cool.
It was so, all there.
So that moment and that discovery, and I think at that moment when Jeannie saw that and the light started going on, a lot of other things started happening in her head as well in terms of discovering more value, and we'll get to that in a moment. But I just want to just give you context about service architecture map. It's really a different form of a service map. So where the service maps we've been talking up to this point, which is really a mind map, is really more of an operational focus map. That's sort of to work out which are the different components and all the rest of it. But you actually do need a map that sits on top of it, that has got a more strategic architectural focus and from a tactical perspective to really start understanding what are the components and how it all fits together. And also, very importantly, start including a governance and a risk component as well. So in other words, people that are now in a team lead management sort of layer can now start asking very critical questions in terms of risk of different components, or whether we've got the governance and management processes and framework in place and actually to support and make sure that the service are actually capable of providing the value to the company. I would not recommend you do a service architecture map on each and every service. These ones are particularly more for the more complex one, and the ACE one specifically fell very nicely into this category because of the complexity of it. So we decided, and this is IP and stuff that we have to be very conscious of, and I'm sure that you can read each and every little block there. Anybody that can read that can get a prize. Okay, but yeah, this is very company sensitive information and also IP locked into and all the rest of it. But Jeannie felt very compelled in terms of, Leon, can we please show the audiences, because I want to say a few things about this diagram that particularly caught her attention and why this was so valuable to her. So I'm going to hand over to Jeannie to just take it from here, please.
Yeah, so this is the Lego part of our presentation. This is what Leon calls my light bulb moment, when I looked at this and realised, oh my goodness, I can actually see this thing represented in one place. So each of those components, I wanted to make sure I had the correct support and maintenance and licensing contracts standing behind it. I wanted to work with our commercial team so that they could make sure that all the contracts were in place. We used this to show who supported which components, and so that's that legend down the right-hand side is 23 combinations of teams, both internal and vendor partners, that support this. Some only one tiny little piece and some quite a lot. We have our governance structures. Governance across the service, you can imagine that there's quite a few, so we show those there. And all of our front-end and back-end components. So, you know, unfortunately I have had to scrub this because, you know, for security across AT Hop, we didn't want to show all that stuff. And I haven't put on here a risk layer, but we also, a bit like a GIS layer, you can build up different layers across this map to show different things. So we have one where we use risk, which obviously I haven't put on here. Yeah. So this was the thing that did it for me.
So obviously this is a very complex picture with lots of different colours, and we've got the governance painted across it, we've got the risk stuff painted across it, we've got all the ownership stuff painted across it, and all the other things that we've got in there that we can't talk about. But why is this very complex diagram so valuable to you? What have you discovered on top of support that is so very valuable for you?
Yeah, it's not only about support. The main thing that these maps are, for me, they're conversation starters. So the services that I own and that I'm responsible for, I keep service maps in my handbag, which is a little bit sad, and I whip them out at meetings. And I put them down on the table and I say, I'm talking about this part. And we have a lot of tendency in IT to use jargon. And so we go, oh, the who flung dung on the binary what search. And to an architect, that will mean one thing, it's an apple. And to a business analyst, it's an orange. And to a support person, it's a banana. And to the business, it's a pomegranate. But no one puts their hand up and says, actually, what is that thing that you're talking about? And so I use these maps to be on the same page as everyone else that that is around the table. We use it to explain quite complex integration to the business. We like to sit down with new project managers or project managers that are kicking off new pieces of work and say, these are the services that you will be touching when you build and deliver. Obviously, the support teams, we use them all the time, and our support partners. So I think I said a little bit before when we were talking about the AFES map that we use them with the commercial team to make sure that everything is in order there. One of the really good things that you can use in a commercial sense is to make sure that your SLAs are backed off correctly. So if I have a 4-hour return to service at the front end of the service, then I don't want a component buried 3 levels down that has a 3-week return to service, because if that breaks, I can't meet my upfront SLA. So it's a way of visually showing the way that the SLAs need to back off. For transitioning something into BAU and clipping it into the environment that it's going to live in, absolutely invaluable, absolutely invaluable. I don't know how I managed to do that before I had them, you know. And I think that in terms of solutioning, like one of the deliverables of a good solution, I think, is supportability. And if you can see the service environment that you're designing for, we often have a logical environment, we have a physical environment, but we don't actually have overlaid on the top the service environment. And in IT, we're quite good at doing things because we can and not necessarily because we should. So it does help there, and I think that if you're solutioning, you might solution design, develop, deliver. If your delivery can come with some kind of service layer, so it shows that you have considered that in your build, you must have a competitive advantage if there were two different organisations like looking at the same widget. You'd have to take into account supportability. So there's a limitless amount of things that you can do with this. It touches every part of the development life cycle, and certainly when you're trying to support and maintain a very complex BAU environment, these things are just part of your tool set. Like, you know, let's be honest, they're not going to save the world if they're the only tool that you have. You know, in support we have a number of tools, and this is just one part.
Absolutely. I want to highlight a couple of things. One is that this is not the silver bullet. There are other things as well. The other thing I want to highlight is this is a collection of a number of people's knowledge. So are those diagrams, as it's such, are they absolutely perfect the moment we finish with them, Jeannie?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all.
So in other words, I have certainly, and why I'm using this one is just to demonstrate, and I've done this with more than one customer, more than a few customers already, but every time that somebody who understands the service and was not part of the design session, if you put that map in front of that person, it literally takes 30 seconds for the person to take out their pen and add something to their diagram. And what do you think we feel the moment a person adds something to their diagram? Do you think we feel a bit offended? On the contrary, we actually go, yes, because that person has just added to the accuracy of that picture. And everybody that uses that gets the benefit from it. And not only in IT, but in management, the architects, the people who change. From a project perspective, I've got customers that are now making this mandatory as part of their project lifecycle to actually create these diagrams. And the one thing I need to add to this is there is as much value, not only the diagram itself, but the process or the journey of building those diagrams is probably equally as valuable as the diagram itself.
Oh, absolutely. The process that we went through to build these, putting people together in a room, like, you know, it's not rocket science really, but we don't do it so well in IT. We love having meetings. We love having meetings. We don't always achieve a lot of things in our meetings. And we love doing emails and sending emails to everybody in the world. But we don't actually have conversations very often. And so putting people from different teams into a room to talk about the one service was just an invaluable thing, it really was.
And to me, it's just seeing all that knowledge being shared between the different disciplines in IT.
It was collaboration in action.
Absolutely.
And it continued after we had, all IT shops like to say, oh, we're collaborative, we collaborate to solve things. But, actually doing that and walking the walk is.
So this architecture maps is still fairly new stuff that we're doing. It's not something that has been around for many, many years. So with anything like this, and it is a good tool, it's a great help, and it unlocked a lot of benefits for Genie, because the one thing I wanted to talk about is the service architecture map sits at the higher level in terms of more the tactical, strategical sort of level. You've got the service map that very much plugs the operational sort of focus, and then below that sits your CMDB. And I'm sure each and every one of you in your organizations have got a fully functioning end-to-end CMDB in place. Yep. What did that TUI ad say? Yeah, right. Okay, so that's really, if we start thinking about that sort of picture and that sort of flow of information, it is very specific. It addresses very specific requirements and for the different people in terms of understanding how this end-to-end picture looks together. And you can put all these different services where they maps together and on different systems, and effectively the value then becomes extremely valuable to not only IT, but then also to the business in that conversation starters. I always call it that people are now bringing knives to Genie's gunfight. Because how often do we as IT go and start conversations on services and systems or whatever, and we might not know everything about everything? And effectively, somebody was actually an expert. You're taking a knife to a gunfight. That guy can, take you out very quickly. But at least now, everybody have that same piece of information in front of us. And 2 o'clock in the morning, when somebody's on holiday and whatever hits the fan does not get distributed evenly, comes your way on a support call, at least you have the benefit of that information to start making better decisions. And that's really the value of all this.
Yeah, that is the value, because I get those 2 a.m. calls, and just a great thing to be able to look at the end-to-end service and know who to call.
And this light bulb moment with this map was specifically the reason that I asked Genie, let's do this presentation and share that message, because it's better coming from a customer than from someone like myself. So with anything in life, this is not absolutely perfect. As we said, the diagrams and the maps that we draw changes in terms of on an ongoing basis. Maybe somebody has shared that information that's not absolutely perfectly accurate, but that's fine. But there's also challenges around these maps, and I think Eugenie has identified a few which we're going to focus on now to see how we can actually plug that to actually help them to achieve and get more out of them. Would you like to take us through those challenges, please?
Yeah, I mean, the benefits are absolutely huge. The benefits for my business in terms of a support business have been huge. But let's not pretend. There are challenges. It's quite warty. Keeping them updated is a really, really big challenge, because not many organisations do have a fully functioning and wonderful CMDB that you can plug these into in an electronic sense. So it depends what format that you've got them in. At the moment, I have all of these service maps in a Visio format. They are two-dimensional, they are pictures, and every single time we innovate in our environment, they change. So you have to have a process and gates to keep them up to date. Connecting with the people who have the IP to do them in the first place, oh crikey, it's like herding cats. Trying to get people to give you their valuable time so that you can extract their knowledge is no mean feat. It's very, very difficult. And publishing them or marketing them to a constantly changing audience is really difficult. So we bring a lot of contract resource on for specific pieces of work. They want to deliver on budget, they want to deliver on time, they don't want to give you any of of their time, and we need to make sure that we can target those people and reach out to them so that they don't reinvent the wheel. We need to make sure that they're not developing against each other, so one development cancels out another, and this is the way to do it. So publishing to that constantly changing development audience is very, very difficult.
And obviously, if you're going to struggle in your organisation to get ownership assigned to different services, then the challenge of keeping these diagrams and maps up to date is going to be even larger, because you need somebody that have that end-to-end view of the service and will take ownership of that and believe in the stuff to actually make sure that it physically does happen. So, ladies and gentlemen, the next steps, and these steps are pretty much around the service mapping and architecture mapping that Jeannie and I came up with in terms of the things that we need to look at going forward, specifically around this, is really about, and I'm going to ask Jeannie to talk through some of that for us, and then I'll cover in the rest.
So before I said that we do have some service owners, well, we still have some services that are kind of not so eager for people to own, so we're still trying to find owners for a couple of them. It's about associating the technical service owners and the services so that people know who to come and talk to. If you're a new developer in our environment to deliver a widget, I want you to be able to look that up and know that you can come and talk to me about the AT Hop service, and I'll tell you where you might be touching my service and who you might need to talk to. And that's going to save you a huge amount of time of discovery, diving into file shares and libraries to try and find out that information. We need to, as I said before, we had no business when we started up. We were just an enormous startup. So now we have to confirm those services and the priorities of them with our business. So we're ready to go and take that to the business now. We're kind of taking our next step in service management. We're automating our change system and introducing a CMDB as part of that. For managing our assets as well. So sort of taking the next step up in the service management journey, because you get to that point where you have so much change in your environment that you need to change your systems to manage that appropriately. And we're introducing a formal QA framework. So we kind of have an informal one. We have templates that you need to fill out to get something into production and integrate it into the environment and all of that. But this is a formal framework to make sure that we have the right gates. And at one of these gates will be where we keep our service maps and architecture maps updated.
And in terms of maturing the service management processes, because we now have a very good view of what these different, the top 10 services actually look like, we effectively are now in a position to support the other service management processes in a much better way, because that level of understanding is now there, and that's effectively a journey that we're now taking forward in Auckland Transport.
I don't think it ever ends. And to look at this kind of exercise as a box tick on a project plan, you're never going to get to the end of it. These are living documents in the same way as the system is a living thing and the environment is a living thing. They will always be changing, and the documents have to change to keep up with them. So, you know, if you enter into the exercise going, in this period we will do this and never think about it again, it's not the thing for you.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, Jeannie. All right, so we've got 10 minutes to go, and we planned it this way to leave some time for questions and answers at this time. I've got two prizes here, so I'm going to ask Jeannie to select who we are answer a question from, and then that person will get the first prize, and the second person will get the second prize. Is that okay with everyone? Cool. So any questions, ladies and gentlemen, shoot away.
Um, With that particular service, no, because it was new and we knew very, very little about it. But with other architecture maps, yes, I've looked at it and thought, why do we have that there?
And you're quite right. You know, the first light bulb moment, obviously the penny dropped and all this other value came. And it was quite stunning that Jeannie immediately after that said, you know what, I want this service, and this service done again as well on this. So immediately know which ones she had similar sort of issues that she wanted to tape up. So, and that was quite stunning. Jeannie, pick a second one.
Right, at the back there. Yeah, that's you. I don't think you can really compare them. Our arrangements with our operators are more contractual than service level. Yeah.
Cool. So those two gentlemen afterwards, could you please come to the front, just collect your prizes, please. Thank you very much. Right, any more questions, please? Yes, sir. There's some of the stuff that is deliberately not shown on the diagram for IP and also organizational sort of sensitivity reasons.
Yeah, so there are relationship mappings between them.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
Right. What we did was we combined a lot of services. So we said, we have this one here and this one here, and actually that all together makes one. So we kind of listed everything that we do, because we started off looking at it in terms of IT, you know. So we had Exchange and AD. And you know, and those kind of things, and then we put them together, and we said, no, this is provisioning, you know, and yeah, we found that we could fold them together, and it changed the way that our engineers, in particular, thought about what they do and why they do it. Yeah, it was really good exercise. Yes. So we have, you know, core things that need to be up and running for matters of public safety and, you know, to keep our, public transport running and all that sort of thing. But yes, we do have seasonal effects. So, you know, for example, if there was an all-black test match at Eden Park, absolutely no way would we be doing any maintenance on our network at that point, yeah.
Well, I imagine as workloads transition from on-premises to hybrid and cloud, having a map of the service and understanding precisely where each component is supported and how becoming even more important, so that will allow you to make that transition while fully retaining control and understanding of how the service is built up.
Oh, absolutely. And it's also a way to, we see our vendor partners as partners, and we see them in support terms as an extension of our team. So I want all of my team members to be able to see something in the same way. Yeah. So it makes the transition process easier, but it also makes the ongoing support relationship a lot easier.
Thank you.
And I want to take it further. If you go into the cloud and you start outsourcing a lot of those issues, you are effectively, if you don't understand your services end-to-end and don't map them out, you are in danger of taking a knife to a gunfight. Because everything will go well until the first incident hit. And then who does what and why people should do it. And having that whole picture mapped out from end to end is absolutely critically important.
It's a bit of a tough gig going last, I think.
Yeah, it's a long day, so we're almost there. Yes, sir.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing. A service is a service, and within our architecture map, we have business components in there. I just blocked them out for IP reasons. But if our business want to develop something into it, then absolutely. Because the danger is that you then have people running around with, you know, three different things that are representing the same thing, but from a slightly different way. So we want to have one source of the truth, but we want to make it usable for everybody that needs to use it.
One more question. Yes, sir.
You know, I could say, oh, it was wonderful. But it was a bit warty. We had to use them in anger. You know, we had to have an incident where the bad side of having a lot of partners in your environment is that when something breaks, you get this. You know? No, it's not my bit. That works really well. Must be that bit over there, you know? And so when we use those to bring everyone together into, you know, incident management onto a con call and all of that sort of thing, and we're all looking at the same thing, then this just goes away. Because we want to be one big team, especially in a Sev1. So wasn't hard to do that. Wasn't hard to bring our internal support people into the picture. Was a little bit more difficult to reach out to the people who weren't working in BAU. So to reach out to your project teams and to your development teams, a little harder, yeah.
Cool. So our last couple of slides, so related content. You can find us later at our emails or directly after the session. Jeannie and I will stay behind if some of you want to talk any further. There's some resources. Please don't forget those. There's lots of good stuff on there. I'm sure you've seen this before. And then please remember to complete your session evaluation. And with this, ladies and gentlemen, we thank you for your attendance and wish you a wonderful evening. Thank you very much.
You've done it.